Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Hardline. We've got Dr. Jacob Neuheisel here from the University of Buffalo. Dr. Neuheisel, in 1953, the Skyway started construction. All right, this was 1.6 miles from the Inner Harbor over the Buffalo River. It goes down into Route 5, which carries on for another, you know, 2.5-3 miles there. It opens in 1955, and at that time, the Kensington and the Skajakwata were under construction. And we're talking the Eisenhower era, rapid transit, post-war. This is the modern jewel. There are very few people that have been talking Skyway effectively with the same messaging as Representative Brian Higgins from New York 26. He is kind enough to join us on the live line. Sir, thank you for taking time on your Sunday.
Thanks for having me with you.
Okay, so Representative Higgins, here's the thing. We just heard about, I'm trying to get into the history of how we got here. And if we go back to the 50s when this thing, 110 feet tall, when this thing was constructed, there wasn't a plan for the Inner Harbor, the outer. There was no plan for the waterfront in Buffalo outside of commercial enterprise.
That's right. Buffalo was an industrial working waterfront. The Buffalo River was filled with oil refineries, chemical companies, steel companies, grain companies, and typically raw material was brought to those businesses via Great Lakes freighters. And finished product was also exported out of Buffalo. And Buffalo is a major port of midshipment. What happened was a number of things. World economy had changed, but the St. Lawrence Seaway opened, which basically bypassed Buffalo, which was once the world's largest port of midshipment. And with that, a lot of the Great Lakes industrial activity had ended. And we, you know, continue to maintain this structure that was built. The design was influenced almost.
Now in 2017, you got a tremendous amount of media attention about, you know, bringing essentially pedestrian traffic is cut off because of the Skyway's placement.
That's right.
And one of your arguments, and I've heard other people sort of extrapolate the Higgins argument that it's, you know, it's not a question of an eyesore. You know, I think so many people look at this and say, well, it's a cosmetic blight on the city. Some people see it as traditional part of Buffalo, and the this is the terrain of Buffalo since 1955. But you're actually looking at it as to become a vibrant, healthy city, you have to have access to the areas that are the biggest draw in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't, first of all, the Skyway wouldn't be approved for construction today because of safety issues. You know, the Skyway has no shoulders, so if a car breaks down, you're down to one lane. Also, as you know, the Skyway is closed, you know, a dozen times a year for wind, snow, or a combination of both. You know, my argument is both, you know, utilitarian, but it's also aesthetics, and we're underperforming as a waterfront city today because of the limitations that the Skyway imposes on us. For example, if you look at Canalside today, the Explore and More Museum, which Explore and More is a great operation. They're in East Aurora currently. They're going to have a waterfront site. But the design is compromised because the Skyway is in the way. You'll notice underneath the Skyway and the underbelly of the Skyway, there's actually shielding to protect people who are at Canalside because of debris falling from both the structure and automobile.
Now, you did an environmental impact study. You had a statement in 2016. And one of the things that you found was that you know, if there was a Buffalo Harbor Bridge, that would cost roughly $90 million, $10 million for the demolition of the current Skyway. But if we keep the Skyway the way it is, over the next 10 years, we're going to spend $50 million just to upkeep the Skyway.
Probably more like $70 million to maintain the Skyway. So it really comes down to this. You can either invest in the past or you can invest in the future. And, you know, we have made good progress as a city collectively in terms of, you know, waterfront development in the last 10 years. But that is in a context of 75 years where nothing happened, but everybody talked about it. We studied the Skyway or the waterfront excessively, but no actual construction. We have five master plans for the Buffalo waterfront. They all said the same thing. Reserve the water's edge for public access and create, you know, a nice complement of parks and new investment will come. None of that happened. But here's what I'm telling you. You know, we're just getting warmed up in terms of waterfront development. The best is yet to come. We have made progress, but that's about 30% of the build-out potential for the Buffalo waterfront. And when you look at waterfront cities, great waterfront cities worldwide and throughout America, the transportation system is fundamental to that. So the Skyway's in the way. It's larger than it has to be. It's higher than it has to be. And thus, it's more expensive to maintain moving forward. So what we often say, what I have often said, I just want to position Buffalo to make smart decisions about its future, and that includes its transportation future.
Well, I was going to say that the Federal Highway Administration calls the Skyway functionally obsolete as the only bridge in New York State that each year has to close because of weather. And when you focus on the future, now this is now in the news because basically a warrant was put out, a $100,000 award for people that come up with the best ideas to replace the Skyway. And my question is for Congressman Higgins, what are you going to do with $100,000? Because shouldn't you get it? I mean, you're the one who's been talking about this. Isn't it the Buffalo Harbor Bridge?
No, not really. I mean, look, there are a lot of creative people out there. And there's a lot of design firms that are very, very interested in participating in this competition. The good thing is we're going to have a lot of options. And you know what? We don't have any options right now because the only option really is to continue to waste money in rehabilitating the Skyway. So within 6 months, we will have a lot of options. From there, we will pursue an alternative to the Skyway. On the issue of the excessive costs associated with the Skyway, you know, because the Skyway is so high, 110 feet above the water surface, when the temperature reaches near freezing, the ambient temperature, the State Department of Transportation excessively salts the Skyway as a precautionary measure. But you know what excessive salting does to the road surface and the steel that supports it, it prematurely corrodes it. And these are the kinds of things that we're dealing with. So, you know, the maintenance, it's a lot of premature deterioration because of its design, including its height. So there are all kinds of factors that wouldn't be immediately evident that that contribute to the same conclusion, and that is, we can do much better as a city, and I am committed. I am committed to challenging the limits of what is possible for Buffalo and its waterfront. And it took a while, as you know, but the governor getting on board, you know, think about this, in the third month of a new term, a new four-year term, indicates that, you know, he too is committed to providing the resources that are necessary, including saying to his own Department of Transportation, we're moving on this. Enough talk, we're moving. So I think people should be, you know, prepared to expect good and great things, and I'm prepared to be held accountable for this.
Congressman, thank you for joining us. We'll talk about the governor's plans for that money here in a little more in a second. But just wanted to ask you, you know, as you've been saying, like so many parts of the Eisenhower era interstate highway system, the Skyway isn't working for us. But if you had your druthers, what's a checklist that you would put out there to say the following things have to be met in order for any new plan to move forward to replace the Skyway? What's your ideal project look like?
Well, first of all, you have to move 40,000 people every day from the south towns of Buffalo to downtown Buffalo and from downtown Buffalo back to the south towns. That is what the design has to take into consideration. You know, people will say, well, how am I going to get there? I mean, you're not going to remove the thing without alternatives. I do, however, believe that we have an infrastructure in this city that was built for a population that is half of what it was. And therefore, some of these streets, South Park Avenue, Seneca Street, William, Broadway, Genesee, you drive down these streets at rush hour in the morning, and nobody's utilizing this infrastructure. So with, you know, synchronized traffic signaling, just a wiser, smarter use of what we have before we just, you know, build something else. How about the removal of the tolls at Hamburg? So that people, you know, in the morning, they avoid the tolls. How do you avoid the tolls? You take the Skyway as opposed to the throughway. So it's just about, you know, really, again, positioning Buffalo to make a smart decision. What are the alternatives? Tunneling's a possibility. Tunneling technology has gotten much better since the Big Dig project. The Big Dig project in Boston has fundamentally changed, you know, an already great city into one that is much more livable, with a lot of parks and a lot of development that's a direct result of the completion of that project. A structure that is further inland. Right now, the Skyway sits on 30 acres of what could potentially be very valuable land for redevelopment. But, you know, the Skyway is such a monstrosity in terms of its structure. It sits on those valuable acres of land. So moving it inland to align perhaps with the railroad track, that's been talked about. There's a lot of people in this community that have commented on the Skyway, and those comments are very valuable. I think what the governor is attempting to do here with Senator Tim Kennedy is bring good ideas to life. And I think that, you know, when you look at the history of Buffalo, I was very fortunate. I used to teach history and economics at Buffalo State College, and they allowed me to write and to teach a course called The Economic History of Buffalo and Western New York. And I basically used the books by local historian Mark Goldman, High Hopes, The Rise and Decline of Buffalo, New York, City on the Lake. It is a great chronology of a city that, in 1901, was the eighth largest economy in the entire nation. Architects from all over the world, they weren't from Buffalo. They came to Buffalo because Buffalo had a self-confidence and the financial resources to say to creative people, you can get your vision turned into something real in this city. And I just think that what happened to Buffalo historically is that the city leadership, both the political leadership and the corporate leadership, a long time ago, in the decade of the 1950s, became complacent. They thought that good economic times were going to continue and did nothing to adjust for changes in a world economy and the kinds of changes that we had to make as a community to survive economically, to keep our young people here. And as you know, today, for the first time in 40 years, the population of young Buffalo is increasing, not decreasing. Buffalo is the talk of the nation. The fastest growing neighborhood in Western New York is downtown Buffalo. But that momentum doesn't do us any good unless it can be sustained. And I think projects like this, projects like the Skajakwa, that's going to be addressed. Projects like the 33, it's not either or, it's all of them. In the context of a city that's confident about itself.
Is it safe to say that if you went back to, you know, that era in the 50s when, you know, it seems like the decline started to, there wasn't this, the idea was to try to bring Buffalo back to where it was at the turn of the century. that it was just a design flaw. It was a lack of creativity to see where the city was going to grow.
I think complacency and laziness, to be truthful. I think that the city, what is our strength? What is constant? Our close proximity to water. We were the city of light in fact and in fiction. We learned to turn the natural environment into hydroelectricity over 100 years ago. Unfortunately, in 1957, an act of Congress, the Niagara Redevelopment Act, took all that power that you once had to be in the Buffalo area to take advantage of it and exported it to New York City and to seven states outside of New York. You know, we don't make an economic claim to Florida sunshine. Why is it that, you know, people make an economic claim to the unique natural resources, a lake that feeds a river whose water is diverted, that produces the cleanest, cheapest electricity in the United States? Why does everybody grab that? And I think what we were able to do in 2005, through a federal relicensing process, we won a $300 million settlement, which is now financing, you know, the redevelopment of Buffalo's waterfront. We still have $80 million left to improve existing public access opportunities along Buffalo's waterfront and to create new ones. So I just think that, you know, it was human nature. People didn't, you know, they thought, well, the St. Lawrence Seaway is going to open, but Great Lakes freighters will still find their way to Buffalo. Well, they didn't. They found a more efficient transportation route. So hope isn't a strategy, but it does put emphasis behind a strategy.
Where do you think Western New Yorkers stand on rail, and why haven't there been more of a solid movement to get Southtown, Northtown commuters? You know, you look at other cities, that's a 40,000 people, that's a lot of traffic. It doesn't mean that you need Penn Station, but yeah. Are Buffalonians we're not accustomed to something, so we never embraced it? Or was it that the Metro Rail probably didn't have the best rollout, you know, with access to downtown and the way that happened in the mid-'80s?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, the light rapid rail transit system in Buffalo was a jobs creation project. We really didn't need it because ease of access from point A to point B is a feature in Buffalo and Western New York. We don't really have the kind of traffic jams that other, you know, areas do. The policy was born out of an energy crisis in Washington. So what the federal government did, it made available lots of money to communities to do light rapid rail transit systems to so that we would become less dependent on foreign oil. So I think Buffalo built the light rapid rail transit system, which obliterated Main Street in downtown Buffalo. For, you know, the wrong reasons. We needed the jobs because the steel plant was closing. Other industries, as I mentioned, along the Buffalo River, Republic Steel, Buffalo Color, that used to make all the dye for blue jeans in the entire country. That was Buffalo Color. Mobile Oil was an oil refinery. It then became a gasoline distribution center, but it's now closed. So with that, you know, thousands of jobs. So I think we built it for the wrong reasons. And so, you know, we're just beginning to repurpose, I guess, if you will, the Metro Rail system as a commuter system from important points in downtown Buffalo, like from Canal Side to places like the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, where great job growth and great potential job growth is occurring each and every day. So that's beginning to change downtown Buffalo, but the city's changing. But I just think that we have to always be anticipating where the next needs are, and I just don't want this community to become complacent as it did in the 1950s. You know, I mentioned the St. Lawrence Seaway opened in 1959. 1957, Buffalo gets bamboozled with an act of Congress called the Niagara Redevelopment Act that takes all the hydropower out of Buffalo and exports it all over the place. You know, there were other issues as well, but it was a tough decade for Buffalo. But the point was, the economy wasn't bad then. It was going to get much more challenging in the 60s, 70s, and 80s because of the things that occurred during that decade.
And how one bad decision could take almost 70 years to fix.
Yeah, I think so. But you know what? The other thing is there's a, in my classes, we would talk about, you know, the economy is highly psychological. It's how you and I feel about our economic future. If we're confident, we move. We buy things. When people buy things, people make things. When people make things, people work. When people work, they're productive. They're less dependent on government. They're more economically independent and self-sufficient. That's true socioeconomically as well. And I think Buffalo is, we all know, you know, we're kind of in a funk. You know, I remember the controversial goal during the NHL, you know, finals, and people were driving around in Buffalo for 10 years with bumper stickers that said no goal or wide right. And I think that is indicative of the mindset of the community at that point. So those days are over, and I just want to be in a position. And, you know, we got great. Just let me take a moment. Timmy Kennedy is in the state Senate now. He went in 3 months from a minority member to a majority member. He now finds himself as chairman of the Transportation Committee. Tim Kennedy's role, he is leveraged to really do some great things in this community. His ascension to that position represents an inflection point. And politicians, you know, it's all about leverage. If you've got it, use it to benefit the community, not yourself, but the community. And if you don't have it, you have nothing to leverage. Tim Kennedy is using his newfound leverage to move this project forward and move many other projects forward as a young visionary representative of this community. And that's a good thing for us.
Hey, you know, I really appreciate your time, Representative Higgins. Thank you. You're always welcome on the program.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That's Congressman Brian Higgins. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, more of Hardline. Welcome back to Hardline. We've got Dr. Jacob Neuheisel here, and your calls 803-0930 for the Republican line, 644-9875, the Democratic line. We just heard from Congressman Brian Higgins. He referenced the $100,000, I don't know if you're going to call it bounty.
Warrant.
The bounty, the warrant put out for ideas, right? In America's history, do we have... You know, we talked before the program about, you know, the CIA no longer is in the business of assassinating heads of state. But we have no problem putting a bounty on the head of Osama bin Laden's son, as was just announced. You know, we'll give $17 million to kill bin Laden's kid. That's not the CIA doing it. It's saying, you do it. If you want to kill him, we'll give you money. But I've never... This idea that, like, why not give $500,000 to the person who could come up with an idea of balancing the budget?
Right.
Or paying for, you know, Social Security.
I'm really racking my brain, and I'm having a hard time coming up with a corollary to this. It seems somewhat new. It's certainly not new in the private world. It's certainly not new when it comes to non-governmental organizations or various honorary societies saying, hey, we have this prize money here. We want to build this thing. Let's appeal to the wisdom of crowds and come up with some kind of plan that we can implement. And, you know, you're going to get some publicity for that. One of the first things that comes to mind is the Vietnam Memorial was initially private money. And I think government money came in later. So it was a public-private partnership at some point. But the initial award money was coming from a private entity, and there was a design contest, and it was anonymous, and a woman came forward and won with her idea, and it was then implemented, and it's right there on the mall. And so I can think of those kinds of examples. I'm having a hard time coming up with ones that are really government-led. I mean, that normally
But you're right. If the Bills wanted to build the stadium, they would send out contracts to people to give the best ideas. Private entities do it all the time. I mean, to some extent, the military does it quite a bit when they say, we're looking for a new rifle, give us all your prototypes. But the winner of that doesn't get a prize.
No, they
award.
Get a contract.
They get a contract, which
an
is
NSN billion, number and
yeah,
all that other good stuff.
Billions and billions of dollars. But when I look at like the Skyway and the idea, I mean, surely you're going to get some really, I'm sure there's going to be some zany, you know, we heard people talk about putting condos on it and, you know, other things like that.
Really cold magnets. That's
right. Right. But I mean, you're going to get some crazy ideas, but you're obviously going to get some, you know, engineer, some brilliant guy that probably never even thought of this until there was $100,000 on the line.
Yeah, I mean, this is no value judgment here. It's just something that I can't think of another salient example of. It seems new. It could work. I don't know that there's any evidence out there saying it doesn't work. And, you know, the
We did it. New York State did it when it came to the power grid in New York State. There was, Polytech Institute.
Oh, the SUNY Polytech.
SUNY Polytech had this idea. And that actually became a huge corruption. That's one of the things that brought down Prococo and Simonelli and everyone else was the, you know, Buffalo Billion, the UB 2020, this whole idea that, you know, what is the future of the power grid? Are we going to, you know, expand microgrids all over the state? Who better to do it than, you know, someone that works in that industry in New York State? And there was a prize for that as well.
I learn every day about new SUNYs that are out there.
Yeah, that's really true. That is a growing thing. Hey, let's go to the phones on the Republican line. It's John in Rochester. John, your thoughts on the Skyway?
Hey, Dave. Hey, Professor. Yeah, you know, I hate to admit this, but one of my first memories growing up in the Buffalo area was I remember when the Skyway opened up. Honest to God, I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and my grandfather lived in Lackawanna, so we would take the Skyway to get to Lackawanna from Niagara Street. But anyway, he mentioned the big dig in the Boston tunnel. Brian did.
Right, right.
And you guys probably remember this. The initial cost it was going to be $3 billion.
Right
now, they're at about $16 billion. And I just read an article that they're not finished yet because they have defects.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
$2 billion, the total cost.
And well, to be honest, a lot of the technology that you're seeing today when it comes to tunnels really was created because of that. They really didn't know what they were getting themselves into.
And there were a lot of teething problems. I think the one example of that was they tried a new epoxy for some things on the ceiling that ended up.
And the freeze point was crazy. And of course, you had unions and everyone else that was, you know, cutting off the top too. But that project is, every time someone brings it up, I think everyone cringes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, remember Paris tried with the tunnel. They had, you know, that was the model, you know, engineering of its time in the late 90s, early 2000s. Right. And they had no issues on budget. It was well done.
Yeah, it's held up as a model for everyone else. And then
so Boston's like, well, hold my beer. You know, we got this. And it literally is almost five times what they estimated it to be.
So we have examples that it clearly works, but hopefully we can, if that were to be the winning submission, get out without the teething problems of the big dig.
Elon Musk is doing a tunnel allegedly through underneath Los Angeles. And again, his technology, all these patent pended, you know, digging machines and whatnot. But that is supposed to be, you know, on schedule. And it appears it's expensive, but it's not anywhere compared to what Boston was.
Right.
Well, they're talking about another tunnel in the New York City area, I guess. And, Trump put the kibosh on that, I guess, but which I could be good because, you know, I heard I read and heard that they're expanding one of the rapid transits in New York City at a cost of $550,000 per foot. This is one of my concerns about these public work projects when you have prevailing wage and the unions, which have a monopoly over these public projects. I'm afraid a tunnel to replace the Skyway. And I thought Brian brought up some good points why we should revise that plan for transportation and land use. But I'm afraid about when the government gets involved, an argument for right to work legislation.
Well, I don't know why you would have any doubt when the government gets involved in bidding projects, John, from the wonderful history that we've had. But honestly, if you're going to give $100,000 for the idea, wouldn't it be also equally as impressive if they allowed the bidding process for all these jobs to be as transparent?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know,
I mean, if you got a small concrete company, you want to throw your hat in the ring, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Well, Solar City is a good example of that. That's for sure.
Well, listen, Obama, when he ran for president in 2007, he was talking about all government jobs would basically have like an eBay approach, that there would be a website, you could make your bid, everyone could see who's bidding on it. It was 100. So if you wanted to mow the lawn at the White House and you had a landscaping company, go ahead and do that. I mean, how is it that all of these jobs end up going to, you know, Kellogg Brown and Root and Halliburton and, you know, all these different, because they, you don't even know what they're bidding on. You have no access or no visibility on what the projects are. And so people get them in dark, smoky rooms and you never find out. It would be, I think that would be a nice little, you know, if you want to think outside the box, start bidding on things and let private contractors do it too.
Well, I'll tell you, that's another issue. I've been on some government contracts once in a while, and some of the gyrations they put you through in the contracts are just not conducive to a small business. I'll give you an example. I think it was in the city of Buffalo. I put a bid in for some work, and I read the contract, and in the language, they basically said, I have to make a commitment to bring into the company minority partners at some point in the future. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I actually
Well, that's, you know, that's part of, that's the big...
And I have nothing against minorities, but if I'm going to bring a minority person in, it's somebody who is going to contribute to the company.
If you go behind the guys who win contracts on a regular basis, they already understand the equal opportunity requirements. Mm-hmm. They'll find a disabled veteran on the board. They'll throw, you know, as many...
Oh, it's extra points.
Absolutely. And so if they can find as many folks as they possibly can, you get yourself a transgendered Muslim cleric, all of a sudden, boom, you've got that box checked, and you win contracts that way. That's the way it works. And, you know, obviously you don't want to... There was a day where if you were black, you couldn't get a job anywhere because of your skin color, and the overcompensation for that has been a reward system, but it does put people in weird spots where all of a sudden you're just an entrepreneur, self-proprietary company, and you've got to go hire someone that you don't know just because you want to be able to compete. John, excellent call. Appreciate that. We will take, we'll take a quick break. We come back. More of your calls, 803-0930 on the Republican line, 644-9875 on the Democratic line. Dr. Jacob Neuheisel, myself, it's Hardline. Welcome back to Hardline. We've got some phone calls. Dr. Neuheisel, what do you think? You want to take them?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go with Bill in Williamsville. Bill, you're on the Republican line, sir. You're on with you're on Hardline. What's going on?
Love intelligent people.
Well, you're out of luck today. What's on your mind?
Hey, was that, I wasn't sure if that was Dave. Was that you or was that the doctor that answered that?
I did.
Oh, okay. Hey, I just wanted to say I grew up in the 50s. And like I was in a union for a while, but Buffalo, like a union, is very parallel as far as the mentality. Because the unions, when they first took over, and again, I'm not a union activist, or I believe and don't believe in unions, but the fact is, Buffalo has kind of followed like the unions. The kids took over, and then things went bad. So Buffalo has always had a very big proficiency in the 50s and up to today, unlike the turn of the century when we were one of the most powerful cities in the world, banking, industry, everything was unbelievable because I think they were working and working. And like Higgins was saying, different things, the politicians, the government, people look at it almost like it's a separate world or separate entity. The unfortunate thing is, especially in New York State, it's kind of like abused children or spouses. In a psychology, they gravitate towards the abuser, and that's what most of the people in New York State do. They gravitate towards the abuser. That's why we have people like Cuomo and that. They've got to get out of it. We have a waterfront that 365 days a year that's been held hostage by the NFTA and other entities for years. Government is either a help or a hindrance, and I think from the 50s up to today, I think that the government at Buffalo and New York State, like David mentions and I've mentioned in the past, it's been a hindrance to business, and that why I think so many people are leaving. And Cuomo finally woke up the other day and decided, or came to reality that because of New York State taxes, that that's why people are leaving. They're too high, and it's like, whatever. So anyways, I think we have a beautiful area. We've got a lot of great things, the waterfront, 365 days a year. Let's see condos. Let's see amusements. Let's see casinos. Let's see building. Let's see everything. Yeah, get over this. Just like the Peace Bridge, they go on and on and on and on and on. And it's just, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. After a while, nobody listens anymore. So anyways, God bless you. Have a great day.
Appreciate it, Bill. What do you think about that?
No, I think he's absolutely right in some respect. I mean, government can be a helping hand or it can be a grabbing hand, and it's got to be part of the story of where we are today. Other parts of the story were, as the congressman was saying, which is we kind of stuck our head in the sand in the 1950s and didn't think that anything was ever going to change. And then, oh, look, the United States is no longer the sole producer of any industrial good because the rest of the world is, you know, after being leveled, now has rebuilt with more modern technology.
But you can almost understand now that you're a Buffalonian coming from another Rust Belt region.
Oddly the same.
But it's very similar. But there was, you know, there was a renaissance in Cleveland. There was a renaissance in Pittsburgh. Buffalo's finally getting to where those cities were 25 years ago when they started to, you know, I mean, Pittsburgh went from, they had a steel industry.
Mm-hmm.
They went to hosting a G8 summit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty big accomplishment to do in 20 years. You know, so Buffalo is right there, too, hopefully on the rise. Let's go to Henry in Elma. Sir, the Skyway, what's on your mind?
Well, I prefer to keep the Skyway. I think it's a signature entrance to Buffalo, but it looks like it's going to go. So you know, all you have to do is look at a map, and if you put a bridge from South Michigan Avenue over to Furman, or use Ohio Street to get to Furman Boulevard, it might be necessary to upgrade some of those streets, but you could do it for probably $25. So, you know, just send $100,000 to me anytime you...
We'll split it with you.
Check or money order to Henry and Elma. That's right. Hey, Henry, good call. Appreciate that. I mean, I'm sure it's not $25, but he's saying, you know, there could be other things that you could do for a fraction of the cost of $90 million. But one of the things I give Congressman Higgins a lot of credit for is that, you know, he studied the history of Buffalo.
Oh, yes.
He understands the things that we've done well, the things that we haven't done well. And it's going to take someone that has a vision of 70 years in the future. And it's not a lot of times you see that in the Northeast United States where people are planning, you know, right now Dubai is doing that.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia is thinking 70 years in the future. But
why not us?
Yeah, why not Western New York as well?
I think some of that is mentality. I might get some hate mail for this, but Buffalo kind of has a peculiar mindset where it's, yeah, it's Buffalo, we'll get along. And it's true, we're very resilient people, we're very hardy people, but part of that
population,
Buffalo will get along means that we're not really looking that far ahead because we've always done okay.
If you don't like the weather, don't come here.
Yeah,
we don't
exactly
need you. Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, but listen, another huge part of, you know, seeing these businesses that are here and the generational shift, it's not just a matter of, you know, folks coming from outside of Buffalo, but the age in which they're coming from outside of Buffalo. If you got a big influx from New York City folks, but they were in their 60s and 70s, that's a totally different mindset, you know, than you've got 20 and 30-year-old people settling their families and saying, hey, I want 20 years of, you know, clean environment, good streets, well-policed, and things like that. That's a huge part of growth.
And we're really well-positioned to take advantage of some trends that are gone. We have water. I mean, that's unusual for a lot of places that have grown in the past and they have water issues. Think of the American Southwest. We're well positioned in that regard. And I think that if we have a long-term plan, we can take advantage of the resources that are here and that have always been here and use them to the best of our ability.
Well, look out, Lincoln, Nebraska. Here we come. Hey, that's the show. We'll be back next week. Up next is Meet the Press. And one thing we don't get enough credit for is Buffalo's commuter airport. One of the best airports in the country for what it does. You know, I mean, a lot of people compliment how easy it is to travel through. The TSA do an outstanding job, but they don't get in the way. The lines aren't long, but they're putting a lot of people on planes, and they do it in a safe and quick manner.
Part of the reason I came here, easy access. It's great.
Yeah, no, but the airport doesn't get enough credit, and they're going to upgrade the airport, put another $80 million of free money.
Is $100,000 that development money for ideas?
$100,000 to find out how to get Aunt Annie's pretzel on the other side of the TSA. That's what we're going to try to do. Hey, we are Hardline. Dr. Jacob Neuheisel and myself will be back next week. More topics, more interviews, everything you want to hear, and maybe some things you don't.
Probably not, actually.
It's Hardline. Up next is Meet the Press.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.